We're here today at the ISJC with Major Victoria Edmonds, the United Nations representative here for the International Social Justice Commission. How are you, Victoria?
Very good.
Good. Thank you for taking the time to speak with me. Well, for people who don't know, I'm just curious to get a bit of background on how you came to the ISJC and where you served before this.
I came to the ISJC because it was an appointment. I was in a core appointment and county coordinator appointment before this in Camden, New Jersey. We've served in various DHQ, THQ, College for Officers and appointments, and I was appointed here because when they newly started the ISJC, General Shaw Clifton asked me if I would be interested in doing the job because he knew that I had a very strong interest in social justice and the United Nations. He knew that was part of what I really would like to give back to. So.
And you've been here since the beginning?
Since 2007, yes.
2007. And for people who may not fully understand its purpose, can you give us just like a two-sentence summary of the United Nations and what its role is?
The United Nations is kind of like the voice where people can come from around the world. It's the one voice that people come and they speak together, sit down at the table and talk together to work out their issues, created after the Second World War so that people would talk before they decided to go to war. So it's basically a consensus place where people have to come to consensus before things blow out of hand.
And what is it comprised of? Like, what entities, organizations, people make the United Nations?
The General Assembly is basically the government heads, and they have small little groups that they break into. But the General Assembly is when all the heads of the representatives of governments come together, and they sit in the room and they make decisions, and then they break up into committee heads. The Security Council is made up of just member states, and that's what they are, governments, member states. It has 20 permanent members, and basically those 20 permanent members were the 20 original governments that started the United Nations that agreed to sit down and talk after World War II so that there would never be a World War III. And these 20 governments came together and said, yes, we'll have the United Nations. We agree to speak, you know, before we make action. And then they allow other governments to come in once a year. They bring in other governments, maybe 10 or 15 other governments, that can be a part of the Security Council. So basically, the Security Council is the voice of the UN, not the General Assembly. The Security Council makes the decisions for the UN. They pick the next Secretary General of the UN. So they're pretty much the mandate of the UN.
Right.
The United Nations itself is comprised of governments. It's mainly for governments. That was the purpose it was created for. But of course, it also has agencies such as the World Bank, UNICEF, UN Development Department, UN Food, Emergency Disaster Departments. But the UN itself is particularly just nations themselves because they make the decisions, not other groups. ECOSOC is what you would call the program arm of the United Nations, okay?
And what does ECOSOC stand for?
Economic and Social Organization. So it's an economic and social part of the UN. You fill out a form saying what your organization does and the amount of people in your organization. It's a gamut of things on that form. You know, obviously over the years, the UN has asked for more information. It sits before the General Assembly. They read your whole status of what you're doing, what you have done, how your work ties into the UN work. And then ECOSOC grants you status to be a working arm of the United Nations in the NGO sense. It is the program area of the United Nations that gives people access to the UN to be part of panels, to be a part of conferences, you know, to kind of be able to say, okay, I can make a statement because I have credibility with the UN. They know what my organization stands for. They know what they do.
The ISJC in general, like how do we fit into the contribution to the mandate of the United Nations?
The ISJC is a department of international headquarters, and we represent the general. This office represents the general at the United Nations. So the ISJC is speaking on behalf of the Salvation Army. We are not a separate entity within the UN system. We are the Salvation Army. So whatever we do in from the ISJC mandate, we do on behalf of the Salvation Army globally. So whatever we do and how we do it from the basically from the general's office, but representing every single Salvationist around the world.
So that being said, the ISJC itself started in 2007. Before that, the Salvation Army has been represented at the United Nations since the late 40s, is that right?
Right. In 1947, when the United Nations came into being in San Francisco, they knew that they were going to have a place in New York because one of the Native American tribes gave the UN the land. But at that point in time, Evangeline Booth was the voice that said, we need to be at the table. We need to have a voice at this table of the United Nations. And she
was William Booth's daughter, is that right?
She was William Booth's daughter. She was a former general of the Salvation Army, a national commander of the Salvation Army, a very bold, very forward-thinking woman, and wasn't scared to jump in and say what she thought. And at that time, people wanted to hear what women had to say, at least a strong woman. And she said, the Army needs to be there. And so we were there from 1947 on.
When she started this, and she's a woman saying, I think we need to be here. I want to take a stand in these things that I believe. Mm-hmm. How was that received? Like, did she receive criticism for that? Or was she supported in that?
Well, I think because she was such a strong figure. You know, obviously she was the daughter of the general. But I think, you know, she was such a strong figure in that she had gained the respect of the President of the United States. She had gained respect through what you would call high society in America. She was known, you know, for the things she had done and the things she had achieved. And I think because of who she was, she had credibility. You know, she didn't deal in nonsense. She was credible. And because she went to them and they knew her credibility, I think she was appreciative of what she brought to the table. And people took a chance based on her credibility.
And how did that look like in those beginning years?
From the very beginning, it was pretty much a developing situation, because what happened was there was a Salvationist who would come to whatever. Now, obviously, in the very beginning, they probably didn't have very many meetings, but they would come and they would represent the Salvation Army in whatever aspect they could at that time. And over the years, they've had UN reps who have gone to Department of Public Information briefings where the UN would brief the public on what's going on at the UN. And people would go and they would take part in that and, you know, be a presence at the UN. But there was real no per se involvement, where they were involved in committees, involved in actual hands-on work at the UN. But now that has changed, because now that is what we are actually doing.
Right. And that was my next question for you. How has that sort of changed over time from when Evangeline Booth first made that tie to where we are right now?
Where we are right now is we've moved from just going to a briefing once a week to being very active on an everyday basis, being part of committees, being heads of committees, making statements, writing statements on behalf of the Salvation Army, traveling and, you know, speaking on behalf of the Salvation Army, but being part of UN panels and UN groups. So we really have made a big impact over the past 7 years in that we're more visible. We're part of a team. They call on us for our expertise, and they know who we are.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us some concrete examples of that?
I would say one of them would be the Commission on the Status of Women, where we have come in. We were part of the executive team that helped to create the agendas for the Commission on the Status of Women. and we were part of the working force of the working the Commission on the Status of Women. The other part would be the International Interfaith Day, Interfaith Harmony Day, which the Salvation Army was partners with the country of Jordan in actually making that a viable day and a celebration day, where we were the country of Jordan and the Salvation Army were the first to hold events for that day. Now the UN's kind of taken over and gone in different directions, but for the first 2 years, the Salvation Army and the country of Jordan made the impact of how this should shape up and look. So, you know, we kind of made the inroads for what the UN should be doing down the road.
Wow. And the ICC also sits on a lot of different committees.
Yes, we sit on the Ecumenical Women Committee, which is basically a group of ecumenical organizations. There are men on that committee. We sit on the committee for the Working Group on Girls, whose focus is an advocate for girls. We sit on the Commission on the Status of Women, advocating for the rights of women. We sit on the Child Rights Committee, advocating for the rights of the child. We sit on the Commission on Elimination of Discrimination Against Racial Harmony. So it basically saying, you know, we disagree with discrimination and racial prejudice. We sit on the Indigenous Committee because the Salvation Army, 3/4 of the Salvation Army is Indigenous.
Wow.
And then we sit on the Migration Committee because the Salvation Army is involved in migration. It affects the people of the Salvation Army, and we're out there helping with that. We sit on the Anti-Trafficking Committee because that's a big part of what the Salvation Army does globally. So, you know, but we look at committees at what is the Salvation Army involved in, and how do we, and what work are we doing in it? And that contributes back to why we sit on these committees. We don't sit, you know, on committees that really we don't have any involvement in. So it has to be a purpose and why we sit on these committees.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like quite a wide spectrum of involvement. Even just thinking about involvement with the United Nations as well, that's such a big organization. Like, do you see Salvation Army making an impact?
I do. I see it because 2 years ago when they were writing the statement for the outcome document of the Commission on the Status of Women, one of our statements that we had proposed, of course we lobbied with governments for wording put into the outcome document. When I looked at the statement, I saw the Salvation Army's view on the final outcome of the document, which I think is tremendous. Now, you wouldn't know it's the Salvation Army's document unless you read the Salvation Army's document, but I know that it was there because of the wording. We've made impact. Now, the UN doesn't, you know, point to organizations and say, this organization did this, because anything you submit to the UN becomes UN property. But it, you know, the impact is that we have a place at the table. People do call us when they want us to be a part of a panel. People do call us when they want us to be part of a team. People do call us when they want us to be partners. So we've made an impact. It may not be the great big Hollywood view, but we know that we have made an impact. And the mere fact that you mentioned Salvation Army and people know who we are now.
Just back to what you were saying about Evangeline Booth, do you think we've done well, like, continuing on with what she envisioned?
I'm not sure she would have been happy about everything, but I think she would be happier now knowing that we have more of an input, more of a voice, and more of a presence. I think she'd be very happy about that. She was a person who was bold. And unless we're bold in the work we do, and unless we, you know the facts and the figures of what we're going to do, and you know what you're coming to the table with. You're not just coming willy-nilly with, you know, junk, but you know your facts and you know your figures. People trust you. People will trust you at the UN if you know what you're doing. But if you're just speaking off the cuff, they want to see substance in what you do. And I think she would be happy knowing that we have substance behind what we're doing now.
Mm-hmm. We know that the issue of social justice is very vast and very layered. But if you had to define it in your own words, how would you do that?
I would say social justice is really making sure that people everywhere have the same opportunities. Opportunity for education, opportunity to have jobs, opportunity to have sanitation and water. You know, that there's equality amongst everyone. Now, yes, is that a bit far-reaching? Probably, in my lifetime, probably. But I think if we're going to be true to what God has called us to, there has to be equality in all things. And people should not be denied their rights to have food, shelter, and housing. But people should also have equality in job opportunities. People should have equality in opportunities to have advancement in their jobs, advancement in whatever takes place in their life. But there should be that equality throughout people's lives. And we, as Christians, should be pushing for it.
Thank you very much, Victoria, for taking the time to talk to us.
Okay. Thank you.